Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids, going to cons is our.
Hey, everybody, we're the Long Box Guys, and thanks for joining us once again. With us, as always, is our ever special guest star, Josh Hopper. Josh, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I am not drinking tonight, because some of us have to do blood work tomorrow and then see our doctor on Friday.
All right. You should be drinking tequila, then. It lowers your blood sugar. Kind of fool the son of a gun.
Oh, that's true. Maybe I will get a shot of tequila while I'm having a shot of tequila later on in the podcast.
All right, then. My wife just handed me a tumbler full of scotch, my favorite drink. Mike, how are you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing well, and I am drinking a Embassy Suite special gin and tonic in honor of my old partner, Scott, which is not easy for me because I hate gin. But
man, out of a styrofoam cup. Delish.
Hey, classy.
Stay classy, Mike.
That's
it's that Embassy Suites brand of gin that just makes it so special too.
This sounds like a Tom Waits song come to life. And the sad old partner is drinking gin and tonic out of a styrofoam cup in his room. And his dead partner used to drink it. You know, I lived in California for a lot of years where styrofoam is banned. And then I moved south. And the first time I got a styrofoam cup, I was like, I forgot how efficient these stupid things are. Styrofoam is amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. Can't we just turn it into toxic smoke by burning it? What's wrong with these environmentalists?
We'll breathe it in. We'll be the cleansing factory. We'll breathe it in. We'll poop it out. It's fine.
That's right.
Speaking of environment, huh? Didn't think I had a tie-in for that, did you? All this month, St. Patrick's Day month, and we're all Bostonians at heart, we're going to be talking about dogs. No, we're going to be talking about Green Lantern. That's right, Green Lantern all month.
I don't even get an intro anymore. I see how it is, Tommy.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tommy. I forgot you up there. Tommy, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I was doing fine until you forgot all about me. I'm drinking scotch.
Scotch it is. All right. So as I was saying, this month we're going to be talking about Green Lanterns and the Green Lantern Corps in honor of St. Patrick's Day. For some reason, I guess we made the connection. Mike, do you want to tell us a little bit about Green Lantern? In general, because we're going to go into a lot of specifics.
Well, there are two types of Green Lanterns. We start off in the Golden Age, where Green Lantern was a superhero for the Justice Society of America. I know somebody's going to be talking about Alan Scott, so we won't get into that too much. Then in 1959, the Silver Age of comics was underway. Julie Schwartz decided to revamp the Golden Age Green Lantern, make him more of a science hero. In this case, Hal Jordan came along, and that introduced the Green Lantern Corps. The Green Lantern Corps is a group of intergalactic policemen who patrol different sectors of the universe. They are working for the Guardians, and they are the actual third iteration of police force that the Guardians, these a group of little immortals on the planet Oa, have created. The first was the First Lantern, which did not go well. Then they created the Manhunters, a group of androids, and that did not go well. So they created the Green Lantern Corps. As the years have gone by, the Earth Green Lanterns have multiplied exponentially, as has the number of other corps. In fact, every color of the rainbow now has its own Lantern Corps.
And these guys are intergalactic, planetary, right? Planetary, intergalactic.
Intergalactic, planetary, intergalactic. I got the Beastie Boy reference. I'm with you, brother.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
All right. So I guess I'll start off with one of my favorites. That would be Alan Scott. He's one of the, he is the original Green Lantern created by Bill Finger. This is going all the way back to 1940s. One of the things I like about Alan Scott is that a lot of his early fights wasn't with supervillains and it wasn't with you know, monsters. It was mostly inspired by the populist movement. He would fight against slumlords and war profiteers. His ring, of course, was not powered by the lanterns of Oa and all that. His was a more magical inspired ring. Matter of fact, it was inspired by Wagner's opera, The Ring of Nibelung. I'm pronouncing that wrong. And the fact that he liked the way the railroad symbols kind of looked. So he made the lantern look like a railroad lanterns. And he had a magic ring, mostly just taken out of things that he enjoyed, just kind of the visuals of. This Green Lantern was retconned many, many years later to be one of the first gay characters, which didn't make a ton of sense to me, since this character was not only married once, but twice. And he was famously engaged to the first Harlequin. Not Harley Quinn, of course, but the Harlequin, a Golden Age villainess, sort of, who was mostly doing crimes just to attract his attention romantically. Now, this particular character vacillated between very serious criminal gangsters and monsters, and comic relief with his sidekick Dolby Dickles, kind of a fat Brooklyn taxi driver, and later, even more weird, became kind of the sidekick to his own dog. He got a sidekick dog named Streak, who proved slightly more popular than he was in the later issues, in like in 1949, the 1948s, after World War II and the decline of superhero comic books. The dog was more popular, so he was kind of like the dog sidekick for a while, which I thought was pretty funny. He, of course, gets totally reinvented. I think his best contribution, besides, you know, just kind of kicking off the Green Lanterns, is the introduction of one of my favorite villains of all time. And I think the villain's actually more popular than the original Green Lantern, and that would be Solomon Grundy. Do you guys like Solomon Grundy?
Who doesn't like Solomon Grundy?
Yeah, Solomon Grundy, one of my all-time favorite supervillains. And the reason he was such a good foil for this particular Green Lantern is this Green Lantern wasn't didn't have the immunity, or I should say the he didn't have the yellow wasn't his thing. It was wood. Wood was the thing that he couldn't affect, not yellow. So Solomon Grundy, being mostly plant matter, wasn't affected by his ring at all. We kind of find out what another thing that's interesting is the Guardians of the Guardians who set up the rings set up these weaknesses for the rings just to keep the Guardians kind of in check. This ring was affected by wood because the original Starheart, who was the original holder and later kind of becomes the lantern part of the ring, was too big for his britches, so he became vulnerable to wood so that the peasants could beat the hell out of him with wooden clubs and defeat him. And that's the way the Guardian set it up. So I thought that part was kind of interesting too. So most interesting to me is that this Green Lantern kind of brought to forth my favorite villain, which was Solomon Grundy. Do you guys like this Green Lantern?
Yeah, I thought he was great. I also like the fact that he is the father of two superheroes, Obsidian and Jade.
It's an excellent point. Kind of hard to do if you're one of the first gay characters ever, but so be it. Of course, he got retconned a bunch. There's like five versions of him, and so I find it kind of hard to follow some of the DC continuity. So that's my favorite. Josh? Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, with the latest change in Rebirth, it looks like they're going to be reintroducing the Justice Society. So Earth 2 Green Lantern, who is gay, that Alan Scott version is not going to be what's happening in the DC continuity of Earth 1, which is where Rebirth is happening.
That's not confusing at all.
It is.
Josh,
not
who's
at
your
all.
Favorite? Not at all. Not even a little tiny bit. Josh, what's your favorite Green Lantern?
So since, you know, we are talking about Green Lanterns and it's St. Patrick's Day is coming up and we're from Boston, my favorite Green Lantern is, of course, Larry Bird. No, it's Guy Gardner.
One punch! One punch!
That's really what solidifies Gardner for me.
I like to think of Guy Gardner as the Larry Bird of the Green Lantern Corps.
Because he can't jump? I like to think
you know,
it's because
say,
he's the whitest of all the Green Lanterns, other than Hal Jordan.
Larry Bird dunks a lot more than you'd think. I mean, that guy, he was taller than you think. How tall do you think Larry Bird was, Tom?
6'6".
No, he's like 6'10 or 6'11.
Oh.
Nobody realizes that? He's like the Dirk Nowitzki before Dirk Nowitzki. Nobody realizes that. Young people don't realize that. Hey, young people, go watch some footage of Larry Bird. It's freaking Green Lantern week here. Anyway, back to Guy Gardner. Guy Gardner is the angriest of all Green Lanterns, though he didn't start out that way. And apparently, in the pre-retcon version of him and Hal Jordan were actually like a 50-50 toss-up who was going to get the ring. But but somebody had done a little precognition and decided that if Gardner had got the ring early, he was actually going to come to an early demise. So they made sure that Hal Jordan was the closer of the two when the ring finally landed on Earth. Was that a Booster Gold time thing? I can't remember.
Yes. Yes, it was okay. Booster Gold. Who ensured that Guy did not get the ring first.
Thanks, Booster. And damn you, Skeets. Nobody likes you. Anyway. So Gardner goes on as for a career as one of the Lanterns. And generally, initially he starts out as kind of like a nice guy, but then something happens to him, right? And that actually triggers a personality change in him. And he becomes the really bad jerk that I love to hate.
Yeah, that's something that happened is he sacrifices himself to save the world, gets stuck in the Phantom Zone, and gets tortured by Zod for years. That would cause a personality change and also give him brain damage.
So you're saying he has a valid excuse. But anyway, I like the character he becomes. He's much more interesting as a guy, as the stuck-up jerk that he becomes. And then in Justice League America, he has, of course, one of his shining and most fantastic moments in all of comicdom, where him and Batman get into an altercation, and Gardner challenges him to a fight, and no powers, and says he's not going to use the ring, and of course... Tom, what happens? You're muted. One punch!
One punch! I muted myself because my dog was barking, but yeah, one punch! Booster Gold, Batman hauls up, punches him in the face, and Booster Gold loses his mind like any fan in a wrestling match. Blue Beetle, I'm sorry, Blue Beetle.
It's Blue Beetle and Black
mind.
Canary are in the room. Yeah. And
Black Canary is so happy she's there.
And it's the greatest comic of all time because essentially throughout the entire issue, while everything is going on, Blue Beetle just shows up in the corner of panels with one finger up yelling one punch and laughing. He contributes to nothing for the rest of the issue. He doesn't try to save anyone. He doesn't try to stop a villain. He basically is uncontrollably laughing for the entire issue.
Which would be any one of us if that happened. If I got into an altercation with LT, and LT is like, fine, and finally got sick of my shit and knocked me cold, Josh, you would be running around with one finger up for the rest. If it was during the apocalypse, you would still just be running around.
Indeed.
I was going to say, it would take way more than just one episode. We would carry that gag for a long time.
And then later on in his career, he basically gets Superman actually belittles him in one of the issues, and he decides to leave the Justice League. And then that's, I think that's when he gets the is that when he gets the yellow ring in his own comic, I think, right after that? And the comic is okay, and it's slightly hilarious. And some of the retcons and changes they made for him over the years have been interesting. But really, it's that really just the terrible attitude Gardner and the and his interactions with everybody in the Justice League that he rubs the wrong way that really endears the character to me.
All right, getting back to something from earlier. Everything I know about Larry Bird was told to me by Roddy Piper in kind of a long, slurred rant that he told me one time about Larry Bird handing him a shoe and not knowing who Larry Bird was, so he threw the shoe back at him at Boston Garden. And that's all I really ever knew about Larry Bird anyway. So I just wanted to make sure everyone knew that I'm a bad Bostonian.
Thanks for clearing that up. I was really concerned of your knowledge of Larry Bird. I'm sure all of the Long Box Legion is very concerned. They're like, oh, thank God we finally heard Tom's Larry Bird story.
You're welcome.
For, at least it's the last one.
Yes.
Thank God.
Thank God. Mike, smartass, pain in my ass, love of my life. Who's your favorite Green Lantern?
Apparently, gin makes me nasty. I'm just saying that. I'm going to throw that out right now. I don't want to talk about my favorite. I want to talk about the worst Green Lantern. I'm going to talk about Simon Baz. The first Arab American Green Lantern. Because you know what? Apparently, the only people who can overcome fear are in the United States. I just want to throw that out there first. But He was created by Jeff Johns, who is of Lebanese-American descent. And I thought it was great that he came up with the idea. In the storyline, Hal Jordan is been kicked out of the Green Lantern Corps. And Sinestro comes back because he needs him, and he creates a green power ring for Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan ends up dying with Sinestro, long story. The ring then searches out somebody. The two other Green Lanterns, John Stewart and Guy Gardner, are already off planet doing something else. So it finds Simon Baz, who is a car thief, also a Muslim American, and the van he happens to steal is loaded down with explosives. And so he gets sent to Guantanamo Bay. I understand his need to have social commentary on Guantanamo Bay, but the worst part about Simon Baz is that they give him a ski mask as his mask and give him a gun. So his very first appearance is in Green Lantern number 0, and it's just a Muslim American in a ski mask pointing a gun at everybody, which is not terrifying at all.
And just to be clear, right, that's not a gun he creates even with the ring, right? He actually carries a gun.
Yeah, he actually carries a gun. Because what do you need the most powerful weapon in the universe on your hand for when you got a gun?
Rings aren't very intimidating, Mike. You can't just hold somebody up in an alley with a ring.
That's true.
I mean, it's like a 9mm, right?
Oh, no, it's probably a 40 cal.
Or a 45. One of the two. Cal. So, I mean, you know.
Nothing about guns.
38, 44, whatever it takes to get the job done. Name that movie.
It's an 88 Magnum. It's designed to shoot through schools.
That movie was Johnny Dangerously?
Yes.
Joe Mine was Mr. Mom. Troll.
Absolutely. What was yours from, Tom?
Mr. Mom.
Mr. Mom.
What do you got there? 32, 38, 44, whatever gets the job done.
So Simon Baz is currently starring in a Sam Humphries written book called The Green Lanterns, where he and Jessica Cruz are two rookie lanterns trying to learn their way in this crazy universe. It's actually very well written, and it's kind of redeeming Simon Baz as a character, but his initial startup was horrible. LT, who do you have?
Sorry, guys. Before we skip over here, Mike, on your last track there, how many Green Lanterns per sector are there now at this point? Like, aren't the Green Lanterns sick of sending Green Lanterns to Earth at any point? Like, why do they keep doing that?
So the Green Lanterns have found out that humans actually make the most powerful lanterns because of their willpower. And that's why there have been so many. There's actually 2 Green Lanterns per sector now, because they realized that having only one full-time person taking care of an entire section of the galaxy was probably not a good idea. So
yeah,
2814. Well, Guy Gardner is actually in charge of the Red Lanterns now and was responsible for all of 2814. It was a deal that he struck with with Hal Jordan, and the only 2 lanterns who can be on Earth right now are Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz, and they're not allowed to leave Earth.
Huh. Okay. I'm sorry, Tom. ILT, go ahead. I didn't mean to interject.
So, I've been mostly a Marvel guy, so I have not read a lot of DC, but when I did start reading DC, I picked up the Showcase Presents phone book editions, and the one that I gravitated towards was the Green Lantern, Silver Age, Hal Jordan. And I really like the origin story with Avinsur. Kind of his last effort was basically sending out the ring to find a worthy successor for it so that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands, and ripping Hal Jordan out of his airplane trainer and dragging him to the spaceship to take on the ring of power, and Hal Jordan being this worthy individual who takes up the mantle of the Green Lantern without totally knowing everything about it. And that's kind of, you know, that's always been my kind of lantern ever since.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Hal's sidekick or partner, his friend?
Yeah, the part I didn't like about this was, and actually it led to one of our panel discussions that we do at Comic-Cons, was I was reading some of this, and one of the supporting characters in the Silver Age comic is a character known as Pie Face, and he is a supporting character. He's a friend of the Green Lantern and works at Ferris Aircraft, and he's an Asian gentleman, and I kind of found this to be horribly, horribly wrong to call an Asian Pie Face, and it was just kind of looked at as fine and normal, and they even referred to him as Old Pie, and it was normal, and but that, other than that, the old stories kind of had their own charm in that everything was blamed on radiation. There's like literally the first Green Lantern story is about how someone was using radiation to foul up a top secret spy, brand new experimental jet, and fouling up the mechanism, and the Green Lantern saves the plane and such. So it just kind of has that old world 60s sort of little light on the science, but big on the dreams type charm.
Do we have any honorable mentions when it comes to Earth Green Lanterns that we want to talk about real quick?
Well, we haven't talked about my favorite one, actually, is John Stewart.
Why did you use that as your Green Lantern then?
Because I like the bitch about Simon.
He's insightful.
Because Mike likes to diss what he hates.
That's right. I told you the gin and tonic in the styrofoam cup makes me mean. John Stewart is the best Green Lantern there is. There, I've said it.
Let me just say this: if John Stewart of the Daily Show actually got the Green Lantern. Jon Stewart from The Daily Show got the Green Lantern ring, that would be awesome. I would totally read that comic.
So Jon Stewart is the best Green Lantern, and I'll tell you why. Because he is the only one with a military background. He was retconned to have being a former Marine. And for a whole group of kids growing up, their only Green Lantern they knew was Jon Stewart, thanks to Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And he probably was one of the best characters, along with Hawkwoman. I think those were the two best characters that they had on the show. And if you get a chance to read Justice League of America, Volume 1, Issue Number 110, where Hal Jordan slips on a bar of soap and knocks himself out, and Jon Stewart has to help solve the mystery of who killed Santa Claus. Greatest Justice League story ever.
Noted.
I will agree with you, Mike, that Jon Stewart was brilliant in Justice League Unlimited, and I really did love that portrayal of the character.
Was I really the soap wish we
yellow?
Had... Obviously, it was a bar of Dial soap. It was a yellow bar of Dial soap. But it's antibacterial, okay. So that's why I was using it. He's not a monster.
It's my only question.
We're not savages.
That's right. Now,
Alan Scott also introduced Vandal Savage to the world.
World, here's Vandal Savage.
We're sure he's going to be big someday.
I really wish we had our number one fan, Chris Mitchell, here, so he could talk about Kyle Rayner. The only thing that I really remember about him is that he has had a lot of trim for the DC Universe, having dated Donna Troy, Jade, and some chick who got shoved into a refrigerator by Major Force.
Wow. He's no Iron Man, but he got around.
Yeah, he's not doing bad.
That's cold.
And I believe trim is kind of offensive. Let's say he was a bit of a playboy.
He dated a bit.
He slept with a lot of ladies.
You're mean on gin and tonic. That's all I'm going to say, man.
Shut up.
Gin makes a man mean. Let's all booze up and riot. Any other honorable mentions?
Or dishonorable.
I mean, we've talked about all the Earth Green Lanterns, except for Jessica Cruz. Yeah.
All right.
Moving on.
Mike, before you pass out, what do you got in the front of the long box tonight?
I thank you for asking, Tom. I wanted to talk just briefly about and congratulate DC writer Lila Sturgis, who is transgender and has finally felt comfortable enough to get to a point in her life where she can start living as openly female now. And in honor of her, I thought it'd be fitting to talk about a comic book series that featured a transgender character. Now, DC Comics actually had one of the first transgender characters, Siobhan from the Legion of Superheroes, but we're not going to talk about her. They also had, in Camelot 3000, one of the knights was transgender. I'm not going to talk about him, because those were both minor characters. I want to talk about the Shining Knight from the Demon Knight series, because the Demon Knight series, as we had talked about during our Etrigan the Demons saga, if you want to go back and listen to that podcast, you can hear all about us talking about the first volume of Demon Knights. But the next two volumes of Demon Knights is where the Shining Knight actually becomes one of the central focuses. And this is the first transgender character who was one of the major characters in the comic book. Now, I'll give you a little bit of backstory. The Shining Knight started off as a Golden Age superhero who was a knight with a Pegasus, and he was a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. When Grant Morrison was redoing the Seven Soldiers of Victory, he changed it so that instead of it being Sir Justin, it was Sir Yistin, and it was a female posing as a male to join the Knights of Camelot. In the Demon Knights, Paul Cornell actually takes it a bit further. He introduces him as a female character, but he claims to be male. And this all stems from his origins. Although born female, he considered himself male, and the dual nature of his identity causes him to split into two people, one good and one evil, after Merlin saves him during the fall of Camelot by letting him drink from the Holy Grail. Merlin then hides the Grail to wait until Arthur is needed again, and then pulls Sir Euston out of time and quests him to find the Grail. This also sends the purged evil half on the same quest, and she becomes a reoccurring villain in the series called the Questing Queen. The Shining Knight creates his Pegasus Vanguard by sharing his blood with the horse, and sometimes they sleep for centuries, which is why they realize that although the Shining Knight was a member of Arthur's court in Ireland, that Jason Blood and Madame Xanadu are from when the Camelot was actually in England, and there have been multiple Camelots. At one point in the series, Shining Knight is killed, and the demons of hell are trying to make him choose a sex. But he fights it off, and Lucifer realizes that the Shining Knight has the power to transcend torment. Now, there's also a relationship where Sir Euston gets involved with Exoteris, who is an Amazon, but it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because X, we'll just call her X because I can't pronounce it while I'm drunk, is a lesbian, and Sir Euston is not a lesbian. She's just a man trapped inside the body of a woman. So, very good series. I suggest you do it. I also would recommend it because if you're a sword and sorcery fan and love DC Comics, they have a lot of good stuff in there that gives you backstory. But even more, they had so many threads that were hanging out that I was kind of disappointed by it. X, when she goes to escape from hell, Lucifer gives her the Heart of Darkness. Does anybody remember what the Heart of Darkness is? No? Gem... It's the gem that houses Eclipso, and she hides it in Africa, which it later gets found in the 1950s. And there had an Arab character named Algebra, who I was hoping would turn out to be Ra's al Ghul, because they give him the Holy Grail to hold on to, and it would have been awesome if Ra's had taken the Holy Grail and used the power of the Holy Grail to create the Lazarus pits. That would have just been flipping phenomenal. And one of the other characters, Horsewoman, is a paraplegic, and she has a magic lasso, which is actually Wonder Woman's magic lasso, but they never tell how she transfers it over to the Amazons.
I'm sorry, Horsewoman?
Horsewoman.
Okay.
I didn't make up the name. Paul? Yeah. Read a book.
I think you buried the lead there. Horsewoman. Okay, keep going.
So anyway, that's why I'm recommending Demon Knights. If you want to read about a transgender character who's really fighting to become what he really wants to be, it's a good series, and it's really the only series that actually features a transgender character, not as a minor character, but as one of the main characters of the stories.
I also like the, speaking of Justice League Unlimited, when Shining Knight and Vigilante have to save the rest of the league. That's a great episode.
That is a great episode.
That is a great episode.
Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box for me?
I'm not going too far back. I've got Silk Volume 0, The Life and Times of Cindy Moon, from 2015, by Robbie Thompson, Tana Ford, Stacy Lee, and Anna Paula Martello. This is the story of Silk. She was bit by the same radioactive spider that bit Peter Parker and made him Spider-Man, made her similar to a Spider-Woman, but she can actually spin her own web. She doesn't need web shooters. And it tells us her story, a little bit about her backstory, about how she kind of self-exiled herself in a bunker for 10 years while she learned to control her powers a bit. And it's her story of trying to find her family since they have disappeared while she's been gone. And it's her kind of trying to deal with the reality of the world and also trying to be a superhero after being out of the world for so long, and also trying to find her family. And it's a great little read so far.
Yeah, I agree with you. Silk is a phenomenal book. I really enjoy it, and I like her interactions with Peter Parker, because the whole time Peter Parker has been out being Spider-Man, she's been trapped in this bunker, and she is not happy about how that all turned out.
Yeah, I mean, she went into the bunker to kind of protect her family because she couldn't control her powers, and she comes out and they're nowhere around, and she's really trying to find them, and she gets a job working at the same paper that Peter Parker used to work at, working under J. Jonah Jameson and such, and it's really interesting.
What year did you say that was?
2015.
2015, all right. I don't know why this is completely under my radar. I've never heard of this book. Go ahead, Mike.
It's actually an ongoing series.
Jesus.
So LT and I have actually switched. I did the back of the long box, and he did the front of the long box. Boom, you weren't expecting that.
Boom.
What?
Nobody saw that coming.
All right. Josh, do you want to do something about social relevance?
No, I'm still going to do my segment. Screw you. Anyway, I had just recently bought...
So take us on a tangent then.
Will do. I recently purchased, but have not read yet, the first couple of trades of Moon Girl and Devil Dino. And it reminded me, when I was a kid, I knew, like, every dinosaur name. I pored through, like, every book. I could pronounce things, and people would look at me and be like, why are you 6 years old, and why do you know what a Diplodocus is? And people would say Diplodocus, and I'd be like, no, it's Diplodocus. Anyway, what did you want to be when you grew up? Little kid, what did you really want to be?
All right. I'm going to go back a little bit and tell the story about Halloween when I was 7 years old. I went to school because I always wanted to be a scientist. And so I had on one of my dad's shirts, and I had a hypodermic needle, and I had three test tubes. Now, because I thought my dad was a scientist, and I wanted to be just like my dad. My dad was a heroin addict. And what I had in my pocket was his heroin needle and three tubes that he used to cook heroin up in. My parents did not know that I had taken the shirt and gone to school and talked about all the science my daddy did back in the house. And that's what I always wanted to be, though. When I was growing up, I always thought I'd be a scientist because my dad was a scientist.
Science matters.
Science matters. I remember that story a while ago, and I thought, oh, my God, I barely remember that. But, yeah, that happened. That was a thing. LT, how about you? You mean drunk you.
Remember, ahead, kids. LT. Remember, kids, stay off drugs. Stay on science. when I was a kid, I also wanted to be a scientist. But more than that, I wanted to be an astronaut. Because I loved science fiction. I loved Space 1999, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers. I loved all of the science fiction that I could watch on TV. Star Trek, you name it. If it was sci-fi, I would be watching it on my incredibly snowy black and white TV as a child. Because we didn't have cable.
Oh, you're making me so angry. I wanted to be the Hulk when I grew up. All I had to do was drink gin and tonics.
Clearly, I mean, just by my opening speech, paleontologist. I love dinosaurs. I tracked through the woods looking for footprints or bones. I dug places. I read every book I could get my hands on. That's what I wanted to be.
So you never wanted to be a genetic scientist so that you could create your own dinosaurs using CRISPR?
No, those thoughts weren't really in my head back in the 80s. It wasn't a thing.
Well, all right then.
Not so much a thing.
For my little part on social justice, I would just like to bring a little attention to the strikes that have been going on. They're kind of flying under some people's radar, but here in the People's Republic of Cambridge, every time there's a strike of one certain group or another, my restaurant has been shutting down. A couple of weeks ago, it was Day Without Immigrants. And on the Day Without Immigrants, many restaurants weren't able to function because most of our labor force are immigrants. Some of them aren't documented. This week we're coming up on Day Without a Woman. That'll be this Thursday. So many women will be going on strike for the day. My wife, Lainey, has decided to go to work. But some of my workers and wait staff have told me that they may observe it also. So when are we going to have a day without a nerd?
Is that possible?
Where
do I go?
You stay right where you are, buddy.
I don't understand what we're supposed to do on that day. We could all go over to Josh's and play Illuminati.
Oh.
We got the whole day. I thought we'd play Twilight Imperium.
Oh, my God. I love you so much right now.
I know.
I can't wait for that day when you go without a woman.
It takes a couple hours just to set the board up, yeah.
I have a permanent game table in the basement now. We can set up.
Ooh.
We can pre-set up.
We should set up a day to play. We should set up one day a year where we play Twilight Imperium at someone's house. Twilight Imperium Day. And that'll be Day Without a Nerd. But a lot of these groups are striking, and it's if you're an employer, I do hope that you'll respect the right of protest and not just fire folks who are observing these. And give it some thought. Take a look at the hashtags. Take a look at who's striking and when. And, you know, just be a little civic-minded and think about these and how they're affecting society. Right now we're having a lot of division, and this is one way to make us stronger together by observing these days of protest together. And that's my little bit. Let's go to plugs. Anyone got anything good to plug?
I got a kind of a long one. So I'd like to thank Friendly Neighborhood Comics for their signing this past week. I showed up. And I got to meet Craig Rousseau, who's worked on books like Batman Beyond, Catwoman, Flash, and he's currently working on the Future Quest. And he has a new book called Perhaponauts, which is a X-Files-style adventure comic, which I just picked up the trade paperback for, and it is pretty interesting. Also, there was Matt Smith, who worked on recently Wake of Fire, which I have a signed copy with a custom sketch in for our next giveaway. So I would like to thank all those guys and Friendly Neighborhood Comics for having them around. I really appreciated it.
All right, I'd like to quickly plug Scott Shaw. So at Outside the Law Box, Mike Manning at Pensacon got himself a beautiful picture drawn by Scott Shaw of the Maniac Prez. Mike was going to send me a picture of that, but he didn't have to because Scott Shaw liked the picture so much that Scott Shaw at Scott Shaw Tunes posted that picture of Maniac Prez and we retweeted it. So Scott Shaw is awesome, and it was really nice of him to post that picture of the Maniac Prez that he drew for Mike on his site. Once again, that site is Scott Shaw at Scott Shaw Tunes, and you can also see it if you go to our site on Twitter, which is Outside the Long Box at the Long Box Guys.
And Scott Shaw did a great panel at Pensacon. He was he's told some great stories about both Hannah and Barbara. One of them was obsessed with making money, and the other one was obsessed with getting laid. And they both told him, there is not, there's no reason to create anything. Just find a good idea and steal it.
Wait, how do you get laid making cartoons?
If you're Barbara, you pretty much can get laid.
When you call like some young ingenue voice actress into the office, like, hey, if you really want to be the voice of Pebbles, you know, you got, there's certain things you got to do.
Whoa. That's a little too young, buddy.
Hey, hey,
I could have at least gone with Betty or Wilma. Come on, man.
I'm happy with my choice.
I would like to plug Kirby Crackle. You can listen to their music at kirbycracklemusic.com or just listen to them at the end of this episode. We will be playing Tom's favorite song in honor of Green Lantern Month, Ring Capacity.
Ring Capacity is always on my running list.
I would also like to thank Volcanic Trout, one of our followers who has been giving us great reviews. So thank you, Volcanic Trout. We love all the members of the Long Box Legion.
I would like to plug IanLino.com.
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 No, wait a minute. Hold on. I didn't get an IanLino.com from that guy. Josh,
give that. Com.
There we go.
A rumpf.
As I was saying, IanLino.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts, stained glass prints, and other geeky things. I myself purchased some great TIE Fighter socks for my wife while I was at Pensacon, and she loves them.
All right, well, that's just going to be about it for us. We've been talking about the Green Lanterns all day. We're going to be talking about other Green Lanterns, which is apropos for my good friend Josh. Josh, once again, I have to ask, just because people keep posing the question, is this your sector?
This is not my sector.
Mikey, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for mean comic book readers. Oh, wait, I'm just mean. Sorry.
And Tommy, are you going to go get some trim later?
You know,
and remember what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Try to promote what you love, guys, and have a great day. I love you, and I'll see you next week.
It seems I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me, but from the corner of my eye I catch a glimpse of evil light. The fear tries to swallow me like I'm just some guy with an emerald. With me, so lost to the dark, and it's now extinct. From any good it once possessed, pledged to the oath, now laid to rest. No time for doubt, no quick eject. Don't give in to fear, like my father said.
Recite the Orange Lantern Oath. What's mine is mine is and mine and mine. And mine and mine and mine. Not yours. It's the Orange Lantern's Oath.
That's awesome. Isn't that from Bugs Bunny? Mine, mine, mine. Down, down, down.
Love it. Oh, what's the Red Lantern Oath? That's my guy for next week.
With blood and rage and crimson red, ripped from a corpse so freshly dead, together with our hellish hate, we'll burn you all. That is your fate.
Noice.
That is an angry bunch of folks.
That's my cat. My cat could easily get this ring.